Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Mike, taste this.
All right. Oh, what is that? That's sweet, Matty. What is that?
It's diabetes mellitus.
What do you mean?
Welcome to today's podcast on diabetes mellitus.
I'm still getting this taste out of my mouth. Why is this so sweet, Matt?
Okay, so diabetes in its meaning, diabetes, we've heard this word. That's a disease. Diabetes means to siphon. So it's a Greek word to mean to siphon or to pass through. So these people who suffer diabetes, what are they passing a lot of?
I don't know, but I'm not liking what I just drank. Passing a lot of, what's the mellitus part?
Mellitus comes from probably sweetness or honey.
Ah, so I was just drinking honey.
Yeah, lots of sweet fluid honey, that's right.
Fluid honey?
Fluid honey, yeah. So fluid with lots of honey.
Ah, well that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm okay with that. Yeah, Where'd you get it from?
So diabetes mellitus has been a condition around forever, I guess. Hence the Greeks coming up with this term. Diabetes meaning to pass through, okay, in this case, lots of urine. And mellitus...
Wait. What did I just drink, Matt?
And mellitus being sweet urine. So... All right. And there's a contrast to this. We have another one called diabetes insipidus. Have you heard of diabetes insipidus?
Yeah, I've heard of it. What is it?
Diabetes insipidus means tasteless.
Oh.
So, no taste.
Okay.
And so, there's two...
Like you're just drinking water and water
yeah,
only.
Yeah, that's right. And there's two main types of diabetes. There's diabetes mellitus and diabetes insipidus.
Okay.
And so, the Greek doctors, how would they have diagnosed?
Well, I assume by...
Just what you did.
Yeah. So what, they drank their patient's urine?
Maybe not drank as much like you did.
Yeah, I drank... I don't even know how you were able to expel that much.
They just tasted it, essentially. So if it was sweet-like, which is mellitus, it would be that diabetes mellitus is a diagnosis. If it was tasteless, it would be diabetes insipidus.
Now, I assume that we're going to talk about why the urine is sweet.
We'll get to that. That's okay. Right. But... Just so we can finish off with insipidus is a different type of disease. It's caused by what?
Well, I think it's got to do with a hormone that our brain releases
yep.
called ADH, antidiuretic hormone.
And they produce too much or not enough?
Well, okay, so let's break that word down. Anti, meaning against, or the opposite. Diuresis means to pass through, yep. particularly urine. So yep. it stops you from peeing out. So, I assume it's not producing enough ADH.
Yeah. And so, they urinate a lot. So, you know, many, many litres per day.
When I release ADH, that tells me to not to pee, hold on to my water, I need it.
Yep.
These people, what, have a tumour or something that sort of stops them from releasing ADH?
Potentially, yeah.
That's a pituitary gland issue, isn't it? Posterior pituitary or hypothalamic issue.
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
So that's diabetes insipidus. We're not going to talk about that today.
Done.
We're going to focus on diabetes mellitus. Okay. Now, just really quickly, we might have heard another type of diabetes, maybe...
Gestational?
Gestational, which is referring to what?
Being pregnant?
Being pregnant. So mothers may develop this type of diabetes. So as a result of the placental hormones from the fetus, that can play around with the mother's sensitivity of insulin. So insulin becomes desensitized to the body.
Yeah.
Therefore, what would happen to her glucose levels, do you think?
Well, we know that we need insulin to tell the cells to take the glucose in.
That's right.
So without that insulin, the glucose is trapped in the bloodstream.
Yep.
And so basically, that the mother can't access her own glucose.
Yeah, so
but
she
the baby
would get...
can, right? That's what's going on. The baby's basically been really selfish here and leeching all the glucose from mum. And the baby takes the glucose. Mum doesn't get any. Mum's a diabetic. Bub gets monstrously large from all the glucose and issues on both ends.
Yeah, so the mother develops more of the typical diabetes case and the baby just gets bombarded with a whole lot of sugary blood and grows quite rapidly as a result. So that's gestational, and that's going to make the baby bigger and bigger and harder to deliver, and that could be further complications. So that's gestational. Well, we won't focus on that today. We're going to focus on basically type 1 and type 2.
Okay.
Can you tell me what they mean?
So as far as I'm aware, type 1 diabetes is what we call an insulin-dependent type of diabetes.
Or IDM.
Or IDM. Okay. IDM.
Insulin-dependent diabetes.
Yep. And was also known as juvenile onset diabetes.
Who's juvenile here? You're only childish.
You're the childish one. You just gave me pee to drink, Matt. And type 2 diabetes is, or was, known as insulin-independent.
Yeah, or NIDM.
Or NIDM, or adult onset.
Okay, and now why these have changed? So why don't we call it NIDM-IDM anymore, and why don't we call it adult onset?
Or juvenile.
Juvenile.
I think it's got to do with the fact that the type 1 diabetes, it used to be seen in children, first of all.
When the first was diagnosed.
In the first instance, it was seen in children, usually under the age of, or individuals under the age of 40, because it's an autoimmune disorder, which means the cells that create insulin aren't creating insulin anymore. And so you require, you're dependent on insulin, so you need exogenous insulin. And it's usually recognized in children. And the reason why it's no longer seen as this is because type 2 diabetics...
Which is usually adult onset
because what's happened is that now their pancreas is making appropriate amounts of insulin. Mm-hmm. Their body's just not responding to that insulin like it should.
They're resistant to it.
They're quite resistant to it. Yep. Insulin-resistant diabetics. They're, because of this and the feedback systems, the pancreas just keeps making more and more and more insulin for these individuals, and so they're getting overworked because it's thinking, oh, I must not be making enough. It keeps making more and more, and sometimes the pancreas can just poop itself, or at least the cells that make the insulin just crap itself, and then they basically start...
Maybe get exhausted is better. A better term, Michael.
Better term. And they start presenting like type 1 diabetics.
Okay.
So they're no longer... So it's not a juvenile onset. It's an adult onset.
So that's normal, but because society has somewhat changed... There are, in type 2 now, there are even 12-year-olds being diagnosed with type 2.
Yeah, and that has to do with two major factors, which is lack of exercise and a very poor diet.
Yeah, and probably also genetics. I think there's a lot stronger genetic link in type 2 than 1. But
which
we
is interesting.
We can get to that.
Okay.
So, that's the main... So, basically, to rehash, we don't call type 1 IDM so much anymore, or juvenile onset, and we don't call type 2 adult onset or NIDM anymore. We basically call it 1 and 2, which is probably more to do with the pathophysiology, so how the disease manifests. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
All right, before we move into those two types, because that's what we'll be discussing today, let's just get a broad definition of what diabetes mellitus is. Now, you've already tasted what diabetes mellitus is.
Yeah, I've tasted it.
And it was sugary.
It was very sweet.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Now, diabetes mellitus is a syndrome of impaired carbohydrate, protein, and fat metabolism.
Okay.
Which is caused by either one of these two things, or actually potentially both. either an insufficiency of insulin, so completely no insulin on board, or an insulin resistance, so the body becomes resistant to it.
Okay.
But sometimes, like in type 2, you can have both of them on board together.
And so insulin, just to reiterate some basic AMP,
yep.
Insulin is the key that tells cells of the body to absorb glucose.
Yep.
Right?
And glucose is important to make energy, ATP.
Okay.
Okay, so without that, the cells starve.
Gotcha.
Okay. Now, just to get some stats, about 220 million people worldwide have diabetes mellitus.
Wow.
And it's just getting worse.
What's the high percentage, type 2 or type 1?
2.
Okay, like by a fair bit, right?
Yeah, dramatically.
I think it's like...
I think only about 10% of diabetics will have type 1.
Yeah, I was just going to say 9 out of 10 individuals are type 2 diabetics.
So it's becoming a huge health burden on the world.
Yeah.
And not only in the developed world, but the developing world as well. And so that's expected to rise to 300 million in 2020.
Jeez.
That's a lot. So in Australia itself, it's the sixth leading cause of death, diabetes mellitus. Okay. It's a significant disease. So before we move into the types, just finally, how it would be technically diagnosed, how a doctor would diagnose a person with diabetes, regardless of 1 or 2, is just a high level of sugar in the blood, which is the blood sugar level, or BSLs.
At any one time or over time?
Yeah, so the best test is a fasting blood test. So rather than me test your blood just after you've had a can of Coke, because you'd expect you to have hyperglycemia or high amounts of blood sugar, I would get you to fast for, say, 12 hours. So the best time would probably be when you wake up, come to the doctor, take your blood. And if your blood levels were kind of over 6.9 millimeters of mercury.
Millimeters of mercury.
That was just to see if you're awake. Millimoles per liter.
Gotcha.
So over 6.9, then you'd be considered a diabetic.
Okay.
And obviously you'd probably repeat that maybe now, once or twice.
So why would it be, just go back to first principles, why would the fasting glucose be so high?
Okay, so regardless of type 1 or type 2, the problem is there is too much sugar in the blood, so there's not enough effective insulin to allow sugar to go into the cells to be utilized. So it just stays in the blood. And so in type 1, there's no insulin at all, so the sugar just stays in the blood. Or in type 2, the insulin's not been effective, and so the sugar stays in the blood.
And so with that, the cells of the body thinks it's starving.
That's right.
And then, so what it does is it has some mechanisms which sort of try and make sugar from all the stores that it has,
yep.
Which ends up releasing more sugar into the blood,
right.
Which further exacerbates it, because now this sugar's sort of trapped in the blood as well.
Yeah.
So you actually get an increase in the glucose.
Exactly.
Okay.
So let's now jump into the two types, type 1, type 2.
Right.
Let's start off with how they're slightly different to each other in their pathophysiology, which just means how the disease develops.
Can we first talk about some of the symptoms of diabetes, the symptomatic triad that we see with diabetics?
Sure.
I just thought it would be important to say that when somebody's diagnosing a diabetic, apart from one of the reasons why they go to see their doctor,
yep.
is because of these three things.
That's
and this
right.
is polyuria,
which means lots of
urine.
Yep.
Polydipsia,
which means you are drinking a lot.
Yep. And polyphagia,
which means you're
eating a lot.
Hungry.
That's right. Eating a lot. So excess urine output, excess thirst, and excess hunger.
Three P's.
Three P's.
And you probably also find when you analyze the urine, it's very sweet. So what's that called?
Glucosuria.
Okay, and that's what you drank just earlier.
Great.
All right, so that's... And so basically, the doctor would give a diagnosis based on that as well. So if a person was to present with those three Ps and the sugary urine, plus their blood sugar's through the roof, let's say above 11, because this time they're not fasting, they've just come in, then they'd probably get the diagnosis on the spot just based on that. And that's probably how most people are diagnosed.
Wow. Can I just say, I got a call from a family member from down in Victoria to say that my uncle started to drift off a little bit while I was on the couch. Didn't look very good. Wasn't very coherent. They called the ambulance. They took his blood glucose, and it was 23 millimoles per litre.
Not millimetres of mercury.
Not millimetres of mercury, good. Which meant they needed to give him a fair bit of insulin to sort of get him back to reality.
Yeah,
not nice.
All right, so let's jump into type 1. So type 1, firstly, is a condition that happens in the younger population, generally, than type 2.
How do they look, these individuals?
Well, they're usually, in comparison to type 2, they're more likely to be skinnier, thinner, whereas type 2 is more likely to be overweight and obese.
Okay.
Okay. What occurs in this, we don't exactly know what the mechanism is that starts it rolling, but we do have an idea it's a combination of an immune or a non-immune cause.
Okay.
So if it's an immune cause, it's where your immune system has a kind of an autoimmune dysfunction and it starts to attack your pancreas, your own pancreas.
Now, in the pancreas, you got a couple of different cell types, right?
Yeah.
And you got the cells that release the insulin, which we're talking about here. Do you remember what those cells are called?
They're the beta cells.
All right. And then you got the cells that make glucagon, which is the hormone that does the opposite of insulin.
Yeah.
So insulin tells cells to use glucose. Mm-hmm. Glucagon tells cells to release glucose. So,
or liver anyway.
Or at least the liver.
Yeah.
But it can tell some other cells to release it as well.
Okay.
But predominantly, majority of the time, it's the liver. What cells release glucagon?
Not beta ones.
No. Alpha.
Alpha, okay.
So beta insulin, alpha glucagon.
So what happens in these type 1 diabetics is something's going on to cause a destruction in these beta cells. So it can be an immune response, so that potentially could have a genetic link.
That's better.
Okay, where the immune system destroys it, or there could be an environmental. And they're starting to think that people with type 1, it's a stronger environmental link.
Really?
And this could be they've developed a type of infection, okay, or they have possibly even in countries that have a very, very high hygiene level and causes an issue with the body's immune system.
Is this in utero?
Good point. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Not sure. But there are some countries that have a high incidence because it's hypothesized of the hygiene link.
Wow.
And even things like asthma can be similar. But in any case, so it could be viral, environmental, an allergic reaction, or sometimes they maybe think like cow's milk, things like that.
Really?
Yeah. So we get, in either case, we get a kind of an inflammatory process going on in the pancreas, which leads to insulinitis.
Yeah.
And the beta cells become dysfunctional and they become fibrotic.
Wow.
And so that functional aspect to the pancreas becomes diminished to the point where there's no more insulin release.
Wow.
Now, this is probably going to take years and years and years. Now, until the person becomes clinical and shows the signs and symptoms such as the
polyuria, polydipsia, polyphagia, yeah.
They really need about 80 to 90% of all those beta cells destroyed.
Wow.
Okay.
Now, often,
yeah.
Are they going to be the first symptoms that these individuals present with? What is that usually what it is, or?
Yeah, so certain things like the person would start to get really hungry.
Yeah.
So the parents, because it's happening more like in children, the parents will see the child's really ravenous, eating a lot.
But kids do that all the time, so that may not.
But they're losing weight at the same time.
Ah.
So they're losing weight, eating heaps, lethargic, no energy, okay, and then might start to develop the peeing excessively, drinking excessively, and then other manifestations, which we can potentially talk about a bit later.
Okay.
So that's the type 1. Is that making all sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So the end point is no insulin, okay, and then as a result, hyperglycemia.
Yeah.
Lots of sugar in the blood.
Okay.
Compare that to type 2.
Yeah.
Type 2 has a much stronger genetic link.
So now, I would think that for a disease in which you've got destruction of certain cell types and this destruction happens at an earlier age, that this would have a stronger genetic link than something which we think is more commonly associated with diet and lack of exercise and so forth.
Yeah.
But you're saying that type 2 has a stronger genetic link.
Yeah, so even in identical twins, they found in type 1, if you're an identical twin, if you develop type 1, the other twin's chance of getting type 1 would be only around 50%.
Which is still pretty high.
But if you compare that to type 2, if you were my twin, identical...
Like Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah. If I had type 2 diabetes developed, obviously, later in life, you have almost 100% chance of getting it.
Wow. So, if you're my twin and you had type 2, it's pretty likely that I'm also going to get type 2.
Yeah, and that's the genetic aspect to it.
Wow.
And so, that's why, you know, parents and their subsequent children, it's higher chance that they'll get it. Okay?
Wow.
So, strong genetic link. But the bigger factor in this side of things, rather than a complete destruction of beta cells and no insulin, the big issue, to get the ball rolling, is insulin resistance.
Which means the cells just, they're sick of insulin.
They don't respond to it. Yeah, that's okay. Right. And a very strong link to this is fat. So, adipocytes.
Yeah.
Okay, so if a person has a higher degree of distribution of fat in their body, okay, so a BMI, body mass index, above, let's say, 30, they've got a much higher risk of developing type 2 than someone who doesn't have that.
And do we know why that's the case?
Well, adipocytes having excessive amount of adipocytes lead to that insulin resistance or that insulin desensitization.
Okay.
Particularly if the fat is distributed more so around the abdominal region.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh. So that's has a strong aspect to it. So
you're saying, because we always think about sugar and diabetes.
Yeah.
So you're saying that fat intake is more associated with diabetes than sugar intake?
I'm not sure about fat intake, but just you putting on weight. Let's say your body's designed to be, let's say, 50 kilos.
Yeah.
Okay. Your pancreas has developed to be catering for a size of 50 kilos.
Mm.
And if you go to 100 kilos, okay, so you doubled your body size in fat, your pancreas kind of doesn't have that ability to be able to deal with that anymore. Wow. As well as the metabolic state you are in with all that extra fat makes you resistant to insulin. So your cells, because adipocytes, fat cells, need insulin very strongly to take up the glucose.
And turn it into fat.
Yeah, I forget the mechanism. I'm not sure if they do it and just repackage it into fatty acids or the liver does it. I just can't remember. But it would definitely need insulin to... because insulin is an anabolic hormone.
Hormone, peptide hormone.
That's right. So you need insulin to store, to get bigger, to grow. Okay, so that insulin allows...
Some bodybuilders take it.
Insulin...
They take insulin and insulin-like growth factors.
Factor. Yeah, right.
To get big.
So, you need insulin on board to allow it to store. And so, it becomes kind of a vicious cycle. So, as the person puts on more and more weight, they become more insulin resistant. Therefore, they become more hyperglycemic. Yep, very good. So, higher blood sugars. Therefore, the pancreas goes, hey, we need more insulin here. So, I produce more and more and more insulin. And so the more insulin tells the fat cells to store more and more...
Glucose.
Fat.
Oh, yeah, fat.
And therefore, the person gets bigger and bigger. And this is continues to cycle. So it's pretty a vicious cycling.
But these individuals at some point, if they're overworking their pancreas, or at least those beta cells, sometimes, that, like we said earlier, those beta cells get exhausted and then they stop releasing the insulin.
That's right.
And so these type 2 diabetics then...
almost become type 1.
And relying upon exogenous or external sources of insulin.
Yeah, like type 1.
Wow.
Right. But saying that, you know, some diabetics, type 2 diabetics, will present with type 2 diabetes without getting to that final point. So just the resistance itself could be enough to be diagnosed with that high blood sugar. So that's really the difference between type 1 and type 2. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's quickly move on to what are the main complications associated with both.
Okay.
In either case, the main symptom is...
increased glucose in the... symptom? Polyuria, I'd say.
Well, now, what in terms of the complication, well, the end result of either case, you're going to have a build-up of
glucose in the blood.
Yep. So either one or two, the main problem is hyperglycemia.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if there was going to be a bonus with having type 1, which there really isn't, but if there was going to be a plus compared to type 2, because type 1s are presenting so young, they haven't been exposed to the hyperglycemia for years and years and years like type 2.
Mm.
Okay. So they are less likely to have all the detrimental effects to the whole body with this excessive glucose as type 2.
So I think it's important to tell everybody that glucose in when it's remaining in the blood is very damaging.
Yeah, very damaging.
It microvascular damage, macrovascular complications.
So micro meaning
small.
So small vessel damage.
Yeah.
And
macro, large vessel damage as well.
Right. So basically when a type 1 diabetic presents to the doctor and is diagnosed, the doctor isn't really concerned by any complications at this point from long-term exposure of hyperglycemia.
Gotcha.
Okay. He or she wouldn't probably look at that kind of thing for another 5 years.
Yeah.
Whereas a type 2 diabetic, they've potentially had this for a decade, if not longer. So they've already had a lot of damage already occurring. So they might actually present, one of their first presentations might be one of those microvascular complications like
retinopathy?
Yeah, retinopathy, which is a change in vision.
Okay,
so damage is already done.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just pause for 1 second.
Okay.
When you have too much sugar in your blood for too long, do you know what happens?
Well, you get these micro and macrovascular changes.
Yeah, so your body kind of makes these sugary molecules called advanced glycosylated end products, or AGE.
So these AGEs.
That's right. And they can go into the micro and macular system and cause their detrimental effects. So in the microvessels, the very small ones, they can cause changes to...
No idea.
Well, you said one, the eyes.
Yeah.
So that can cause the blood vessels in your eyes to kind of grow crazy like a weed or a vine gone wild. And all these little blood vessels...
So you get better vision?
All these blood vessels grow all over your retina.
Oh, so worse vision.
Worse vision.
Oh.
Okay. Where in your kidney...
So you can get renal disease too from it.
Yep, you get renal disease. And then it also affects your nerves. So these products or derivatives from the sugar jump into the myelin sheath or the insulating part of the neurons and kind of break them open.
Wow, so that means your nerves don't send impulses as well.
Yeah, especially your sensory nerves. So you'd start to lose sensation in your body.
Is that neuropathy, that diabetic neuropathy
exactly.
that we hear about?
And that usually is the hand and stockings. So the people would feel it, glove and stockings.
Yeah.
That's where they would feel the loss in sensation in their, where you would wear gloves and where you'd wear stockings.
So the peripheral?
Peripheral. Usually peripheral.
Or
more likely peripheral.
Okay, I'm getting it.
And then you go into the big vessels, okay, so the big arteries.
Yeah.
You start to generally have developing like atherosclerosis. So you can develop conditions like peripheral vascular disease, ischemic heart disease, and cerebral vascular disease. So strokes, heart attacks.
And as far as I'm aware, one of the reasons why this is the case is because often these vessels are quite smooth, and then this hyperglycemia over a long period of time damages these vessels, and they get remodeled, and they're no longer smooth, and when they're a bit jagged and got some edges coming off that, they're more likely to capture sticky things such as fat, and this forms plaques and further deposits, and then this blocks vessels, and then this can lead to X amount of downstream effects.
That's right. Okay. Sounds great.
Sounds terrible, actually.
All right, now, I'm going to switch it to you because you're an expert in, or you're better than me in this area.
I love that you'll never refer to me as an expert.
With type 1 and type 2, we have all those similarities of long-standing sugar in the blood for many, many years.
Yeah.
So the doctor needs to be on top of those micro and vascular complications.
Vascular?
I said macro. Macrovascular. Now, but there are two acute complications which are short. Come on, very short and can be very devastating.
Yeah.
Okay. Type 1 generally has one that's called DKA or diabetes or diabetic ketoacidosis.
Yeah, not nice.
And type 2 has one that's HHS, which is hyperosmolar hyperglycemia syndrome.
Yeah.
So these are very acute onset when the sugar is not managed. So with DKA or in type 1, what's actually happening?
Okay, so DKA, diabetic ketoacidosis, this basically is a means of... So if you think about that glucose, right, that glucose is trapped in the bloodstream.
Yep.
Which means effectively we can't use it to create energy. Now, in a very short period of time, you have stored glucose, which is called glycogen, in the liver. And so we break that glycogen down. This is called glycogenolysis. You break that down into glucose because the body goes, I'm hungry, I'm starving, let's break that glycogen into glucose and we'll use that. But again, you need insulin to be able to utilize it into the cells. So you're just releasing more glucose, no effect.
So your liver's releasing even more glucose even though you've got heaps of glucose.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Now you're going to hit a point where ultimately you're going to use those glycogen stores and you're going to start moving on to other means of energy production,
right,
which is basically fats and proteins.
Okay.
Now, what happens is fats are actually a very effective use, an effective energy source. And so when you start to get the liver to break down these fats into fatty acids and glycerol, mm-hmm, that then starts to feed in to try and reverse engineer glucose.
Okay, so okay? Make more glucose from
make
fat.
Make more glucose. Now, when you do this reverse engineering from fats into glucose, you end up overloading a system. Now, okay, when you overload this system with all these fatty acids coming in, what happens is you can't produce any more glucose, and so you produce a byproduct. You produce this secondary source of energy, and they're called ketones.
Ketones.
And there's a couple of ketones like beta-hydroxybutyrate,
okay,
which is a true ketone, but it's recognized as a ketone. Beta-hydroxybutyrate and acetic acid. Okay? Now...
Is there also acetone?
And acetone as well.
And what's acetone?
Well, acetone is that smell that you get when... It's a sweet smell. Acetone is basically that sweet, fruity smell that you get.
Don't you use that on your fingernails?
Yeah. You use it on your fingernails. Me specifically to remove... Isn't it to remove nail polish?
You tell me.
I don't know.
Isn't that why you use it?
I'm trying to act coy here as if I don't know. So you start to release... All these ketones.
Why would you want to make ketones?
Because what ketones can do is they can cross the blood-brain barrier and then get into the brain and they can be used as an alternate energy source.
To glucose. Okay.
Now, the problem is...
Because your brain wouldn't function too well if it didn't have glucose.
No, that's right.
Okay.
And the problem is, though, ketone bodies are acidic and they increase the acid.
Of the blood, the
acidity of your blood.
So now
your
pH.
Blood's supposed to be 7.35, 7.45, and it starts to drop. And the more ketones you make, it starts to drop even further.
And this is moving into the state, the DKA state.
That's the diabetic ketoacidosis. And we know that's bad. So your body's going to try and do whatever it can.
Yeah.
So this is what we call a metabolic acidosis.
Right.
Right? But your body can try and respond to this a number of different ways because you've got two major buffering systems. The respiratory buffering system and the renal. So what you can sort of do is you can start to respire more.
Is that a word?
Yeah.
Okay.
You increase respiration. You start to breathe more because breathing away carbon dioxide effectively breathes away hydrogen ions and acid.
Right. So a person with DKA, generally in type 1 diabetes because they've got the insulin deficiency, they could present to health professional or ED with DKA.
Yeah.
And because they're essentially acidotic, this could be quite serious.
Absolutely.
So because they're trying to get rid of that acid through breathing, their breathing rate would be quite rapid.
Exactly.
And that's called...
respiratory acidosis.
Or Kussmaul breathing, I think.
Kussmaul breathing, yeah.
And because they're producing lots of ketones, their breath might smell a bit like a fruity or a nail polishy smell.
Yeah.
And because they've got heaps of acid on board, they're going to... potassium can come out of their cells and become depleted.
Because you swap hydrogen ions for potassium ions.
Yep, makes sense. And so they could have hypokalemia, which is a devastating possibility.
Yep.
And because they've tried to counteract all this sugar, they've been peeing a lot, so they could be hypovolemic or have lost heaps and heaps of urine and therefore blood volume.
Which is a number of issues.
Yeah, and, so it's a serious, serious condition.
I think it's interesting to say that some individuals have been pulled over by the police for a breathalyzer because they've been driving erratically. And they look drunk, they act drunk, they don't really know where they are, they're in a confused state, they give them the breathalyzer and they blow positive, but these individuals are just DKA.
Oh, wow.
Because the acetone also blows a positive reading on the breathalyzer.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Didn't know that. And so this needs to be rectified pretty quickly. If not, the person can go into a coma.
How can we rectify this, Matt? It's pretty easy. Well, at least the DKA is.
Oh, you'd, because I've got no insulin, I guess you have to put insulin in.
Give them insulin.
Okay.
Now, are you going to give them a huge amount of insulin in one go?
Probably not. You probably want to do a number of things. You probably want to rectify the volume, so give them some fluids, rectify the potassium, and rectify the insulin.
That's right. You don't want to give too much insulin because then it's going to have the opposite effect and you put them in a coma.
Yeah, right.
Not a nice thing.
All right, so that's DKA. Okay. Well done. Let's move on to HHS.
Thank you, by the way.
HHS. What does it stand for again?
What is it? Hyperosmolar...
Hyperglycemia.
Hyperglycemia syndrome.
Very good.
Okay, so
this is the type 2 acute state of DKA.
And basically what it is you've got too much glucose in your bloodstream.
Yep.
That glucose is going to get filtered by your kidneys. Usually in a normal state, all the glucose that's filtered by your kidneys and then reabsorbed back into the body. But in HHS, what happens is you've got so much glucose that's there that your kidneys filter it and it remains in that filtrate.
So it can't get enough back.
Can't pull enough back into the body. And because there's such a high concentration of this glucose now in this filtrate, we know about osmolarity. We know that when you have a high concentration of something on one side of a membrane compared to the other, the highest concentration is going to pull water towards it to dilute it out. So this high concentrated filtrate of glucose pulls water in towards it and you end up peeing out a huge amount of glucose. But at the same time, you're pulling in sodium and potassium potentially and you're peeing it all out.
And so you're going to be losing salt and potassium and all
that.
You
lose electrolytes, which is salts, and you lose all this glucose as well and you become dehydrated.
Okay, so that we've done the two types and we've seen the complications, both how they're similar and how the acute ones are. Quickly, let's just go and how it's diagnosed in both cases. Really, the main thing that the doctor will probably do is get the person to do a fasting blood glucose, as we spoke about earlier. So this is where they just go without food and then they take their blood over maybe a couple of times. And if the blood sugar is above 6.9 millimoles per litre, they would be considered diabetic. Another thing that can be done is just the, as we spoke about, if you have those, you present with the signs and symptoms, whether it's DKA or HHS or the polys, 3 Ps, with an increase in BSL, you would be, or above 11, you'll be diagnosed with diabetes. And just remember with DKA, most people who, because it's in type 1, most people who will present with the DKA, what kind of population do you think we're talking about? So it's obviously a type 1 diabetic, but in what populace would these people present like
that?
Well,
usually the DKA is going to present in individuals who don't have any insulin. So either they haven't been diagnosed with diabetes yet.
So it's a common presentation for the first time that they know that they have diabetes. Yep.
Or because usually it's the younger generation that are diagnosed, they are quite poor at managing their insulin.
Particularly males. Yep.
Or they may have an infection of some sort. Yeah. So their body is trying to fight something off, which means they need more glucose. And the insulin that they currently take isn't sufficient to pull that glucose in to use for energy to fight off the infection.
That's right. Okay. That's right, yep. And that's the common presentation of DKA. People who are either first presentation with the type 1 diabetes, those who are sick or had surgery or infected, so they are stressed out, or a population of younger males generally who probably think to a degree they're a bit invincible and not sticking to the regime of their treatment.
Done.
Now, finally, another really good diagnostic tool that can be used for diabetes is the glycosylated, remember those end products, but hemoglobin can be glycosylated as well.
So glycosylated hemoglobin.
Yeah, and that's called HB, hemoglobin, A1Cs.
So you can do that from like a blood plasma reading?
Yeah, so basically, I'd assume it's automated, done by a computer.
Yeah.
And so it's just basically looking at the hemoglobin and seeing if it's like, they're like donuts, like sugary donuts. And so if they got heaps of sugar stuck to them, so anything above 6.5%, which is around, correlated to around 7 to 8.5 millimoles per litre, that's the mean sugar state that the body's been in for the last 2 to 3 months. So it gives the physician a really good understanding of how the sugar has been for the last 2 to 3 months.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it gives a mean value, really, an objective value for those 2 to 3 months. So it's very good reading. And it's very good also for the physician to see how the treatments are working, because they can go and take blood, do the HbA1cs, and see if it's now been under control.
Nice. Look at that.
So that's really the diagnosis. Let's finally finish on the treatment. So what's the difference in their treatment? Type 1's pretty straightforward. They just need insulin.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so they just need exogenous, external insulin.
So just injected.
Yeah, and it's usually in 4 types.
Yeah.
It can be very ultra-short-acting insulin, so it peaks within 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's lasts in the blood for about 3 hours, and then it's gone. There's rapid, which peaks at about 2 to 3 hours, stays around for about 6. There's intermediate, which peaks about 6 to 12 hours, stays around for 18 hours. And then there's the long, long, long-acting insulin, which peaks about 14 to 20 hours, but hangs around for over a day.
And I assume depending on when you eat and what you eat depends on what type you take?
Yeah.
Okay.
So in many cases, what they'll try to do in terms of the doctors is keep one long-acting going, so it's just always at a basal level of insulin, but when the person's about to eat, they give them probably an ultra-short-acting one and then just regulate when their food intake.
Okay, what about a type 2?
Type 2, what do you reckon the best treatment regime for most type 2 diabetics would be?
Diet and exercise.
Yeah. So diet, regulating what you put in, moving the muscle. So why is moving the muscle so important?
Well, because at rest, your muscles, your skeletal muscles, need insulin as the key to bring that glucose in, like we stated. But did you know when you do physical exercise and you contract that muscle, you don't actually need the insulin to pull the glucose into the muscle?
So the exercising contracted muscle, skeletal muscle, it becomes insulin independent.
It's a non-pharmacological way to manage hypoglycemia in people who are insulin resistant. How good's that?
Yeah, amazing. So, a combination of diet, exercise, and weight loss can actually solve or almost cure 25% of type 2 diabetics.
That's amazing.
Without any drugs.
Think about the economic burden and what this could do. This could save people's lives. This could save the government money.
Endless.
Just endless.
So, if that's done and it still doesn't help with the hypoglycemia, the next point of treatment is the oral, so taken through the mouth, oral anti-hypoglycemic drugs. Okay, so these are drugs that will bring down the blood sugar levels. Examples of these, so I'll just mention 2 very quickly, is metformin, which is a drug that helps to uptake sugar, most likely in the fat cells, skeletal cells, and stop that liver making new glucose. So it has a very important job to pull sugar out of the blood. Okay, what it does really well is, because it doesn't play around with insulin levels, it doesn't cause the person to put on any extra weight.
Okay? Ah.
So metformin is good to not allow any further weight gain. But because it also doesn't allow any increase in insulin release, it doesn't cause any hypoglycemic events.
Perfect.
Now, the other one is the sulfonylureas, such as glipizide. All right. So this one actually goes to the beta cells and tells it to release insulin. Okay. So that works more on the insulin release insufficiency in the type 2 diabetes. And so this drug works more at getting more insulin into the blood. So that can actually do the opposite. It can cause people to put on weight and could potentially cause a person to have a hypoglycemic event. And I guess after 2 or 3 medications of the oral anti-hypoglycemics, if these aren't managed, then the doctor would probably then move them on to insulin, which would be the similarity with type 1 diabetes.
Cool. Look at that.
So that's really type 1 and type 2 in a nutshell.
Good job.
We covered a lot?
I think so. In the time period, yeah.
So let me just summarize quickly. We did the definition of overall. We did the type 1, type 2, how they are similar and how they're different in the pathophysiology, how their complications are in some cases similar, but how their acute complications are much different, how they're diagnosed and how they're treated, and how important it is to be on top of those complications, because if you don't look after your eyes, you're going to lose your eyesight, so you need to have that one-year eye exam. You need to make sure that your feet are being looked after, so you go to the podiatrist every year to make sure no ulcers are forming, and you got to keep the blood pressure down and the lipid levels down to stop any of those macro or micro vascular diseases.
Sounds good.
So that's diabetes. What do you reckon?
I think we did a bloody good job.
And you still got that taste in your mouth?
No, I've washed it out now.
Thank you. With the insipidus. With the tasteless.
That's it, with the tasteless.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Maddie.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.